This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Welcome to the Ray Lucia program. That would be me, Ray Lucia, and my band of warrior, Johnny Dean. Hello, John. How you doing?
That is me. I am your band.
Are you allowed to say that nowadays? Can you say warrior? Because you can't do the Atlanta Braves thing.
The Chiefs still do it. Kansas City Chiefs
Kansas
still do it.
I saw that during the playoffs.
Well, what's the name
of
the San Francisco NBA basketball team? They're called Golden State, but they're called the Golden State
Warriors.
So, yeah, sure, you can do that.
The Golden State may not be golden for much longer. Although they're going to have a couple of billion bucks on Donald Trump. They're not going to pay him back for the rail.
Yeah, because he can't order it back. It's Congress. He's stuck. He's just
Lord Almighty.
No, they're not. Are you kidding me? They're not going to get out of here.
Yeah, it's my money.
Take a hike. What a moron.
When I come back as a government worker. Maybe a lobbyist or something like that.
A lobbyist makes huge money.
Huge money.
Huge.
But the Congress people, they do pretty well too. They go in broke, they come out gazillionaires.
Yeah, how is that? How is
you
that
You know
possible?
How it is. They get
of
to
course
do,
I
yeah,
know.
They
is
do all kinds of crazy
big bags
stuff,
of money with dollar signs
and,
on
and by the way, it's totally agnostic. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. They all do it.
I mean, they spend all their time getting reelected. It's insanely expensive. Somebody hands them money and says, oh, by the way, wink, wink, why don't you just... it's enough of that.
Johnny Dean and me, we're taking your calls, 844-RAY-SHOW, although this hour is much better to email us, raylucia.com, raylucia.com. Click on the Ask Ray button. I've got a lot on the agenda today, working longer. These are things we didn't get to last week.
This was like a week ago.
Yeah. No, but you know, we got to get to them.
Of course. All right. So what do we have?
Working longer. Works better than saving more for retirement. I did this one just because of you. I've talked about this about 6-8 months ago.
Okay.
But because of you, you questioned it. You said, nah, I don't believe that.
I don't know if I said that, but I may have said, what are you talking about? Really?
Yeah.
That may be. That may be.
The way you said it was, nah, it was I don't believe
that was the unstated truth.
Yeah, you wear it on your sleeve, dude.
All right. Okay.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's do that. How to invest for the long term in a turbulent market. I've got some interesting statistics to share with y'all on that. But
what's long term? Yeah.
I start today, and I did this for you, too. Fun with forecasting. 2018 edition.
We never did that.
We didn't do it. No.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, I know you do. Sit back, folks. Relax. It is the Ray program.
All right, the Stones. There you go.
Yeah.
Mixing it up.
I almost thought it was going to be Louie.
It's close. First note could very well have been.
Oh, this is great. Barry Ritholtz wrote this a while back now in December or something. He was talking about the forecasting, and it's been sitting on my desk for a couple of months now. So pardon me for, you know, Barry talking about your old news, but it's still good. So he starts out by saying this is the time of the year for annual reckonings and predictions by strategists and analysts illustrating little more than they know what pleases their employers and that their powers of prognostication are non-existent.
Absolutely.
Fact. Absolute fact. So they start with Bitcoin. All right, so the early in the year in 2018, and he goes through, and I'm going to name them all. Pantera Capital, by the end of 2018, Bitcoin, 20,000.
So they made these predictions in early, like January or end of 2017, early 2018.
They were, I'm sure, calling all their clients saying, Bitcoin's going to 20,000. Borrow everything out of your home and put your money in Bitcoin.
It was in that high teens at that point.
It was.
All through 2017, it was a big thing.
Tom Lee from Fundstart, 25,000. Anthony Pompliano, 50,000.
Predicting that Bitcoin would be at 50,000. By the way, should we tell people where it is now or was
it's
at the
end?
It's
in the threes.
3,500, something like that.
Yeah.
So this is how wrong they were.
So All-Star Milne, 35,000 to 60,000 by 2020. John Pfeffer, 75,000 by December 2018.
This is what
they were these guys smoking? I mean, seriously. I have some friends, and I won't say family members, but I have some friends that were big Bitcoin buyers back in 2018. Some of them made a lot of money and got out and were smart enough to get out. Some made a lot of money, got out, got back in, and I'm not sure they got out again, to be
honest
with you.
There's a big article in the New York Times just a week or so ago that talked about how in Korea these young people were going online and the early part of Bitcoin making tons of money. Others tried to join in, and then when it crashed, they're broke.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Kay Van Patterson, 100,000. Bitcoin was going to 100,000 by 2 months ago.
It's at 3,000, or I don't know what it is.
Tim Draper, whoever that is, 250,000 by 2022. So it could happen.
He's hedged his bet, saying, yeah, it hasn't happened yet, yep. but you know.
Brian Kelly, 250,000 by 2022. And John McAfee, 1 million by December 31, 2020.
What we're talking about is one Bitcoin costing $1 million and somebody would be willing to pay it. Sorry.
Oh, geez, Louise. Okay, so we talked about Bitcoin.
There's your flavor of the month, by the way.
So there were some political predictions. I won't get into those because most of them said, you know, the Democrats aren't going to sweep and there's not going to be a blue wave.
They were all wrong.
Totally,
they were
all wrong on the politics.
Totally wrong.
Gold. How about gold? Before all the gold bugs, he says, migrated to Bitcoin, which is kind of funny.
It is funny.
The precious metals was where they went to make their bad forecasts. Peter Schiff. Remember Pete?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, he was on a competing radio station, I think, when we were on doing mornings years ago. Had forecasted gold at 5,000 an ounce since at least 2010.
5,000?
Yes. Based on his prediction of a huge surge in inflation.
Didn't happen.
James Rickards, whom I've quoted before, former general counsel at Long Term Capital Management, came up with a $10,000 gold price tag.
How? Why?
To be fair, he said the same thing would happen by the end of 2017. Oh, let's see. That already happened.
So we're going back. This is what he predicted gold to be at 10,000 by the end of 2018.
Yes.
And going from 1,200 or 1,100.
Yep. Jim Rogers. Now, I was on a couple of TV programs with Jim. He's a smart guy. He's got a lot more money than I'll ever have.
Oh, man.
Jim Rogers one-upped everybody, declaring last August that gold could turn into a bubble.
Why? Did they say why they said this? That's insane.
Here's what he said. It hasn't, but the sun still has another 5 billion years of hydrogen left, so perhaps it might.
Okay, so he knows it was a stupid prediction.
Stock market forecasts typically come from strategists at the bigger firms because they can afford to blow a bunch of money on these people that come out and forecast wrong, and they do most every time.
And they wind up with egg on their face.
Career risk tends to keep equity strategists more circumspect than the Bitcoin and gold crowd.
I would think so.
Typically, these forecasts are for continued gains or solid growth or softness or modest corrections.
Yeah, which is like reading the Chinese fortune cookie. The Chinese cookie with, the fortune inside.
Yes.
You know, consider future considerations.
Yes.
You know, pay attention to something totally generic that means nothing.
There are too many to note, but perhaps the most notable offender, and I've quoted him every year for the past, 10 years probably, is former Reagan White House budget director David Stockman.
Wow, there's been a David Stockman sighting.
Oh, yeah, he's around. Well, you don't get the real crazy newsletters that I get. I signed up years ago for Harry Dent's. Just because I know him from way back, we were on a program
was the,
together.
The coming.
And he's been wrong, every year since too.
Right.
So I canceled the subscription, but where I went to get the subscription, they gave me like a whole bunch of other ones.
Great.
And now I am bombarded with these, even though I don't pay for them. But so, I get invited to, you know, to Nicaragua for a, you know, a seminar. I get invited. Of course, you got to pay.
But what does Dave say?
David Stockman has been more than perennially bearish. He predicted a market crash in 2012.
No.
13.
No.
14.
No.
15.
Wrong.
16.
Wrong.
17.
Nope.
18.
Nope.
And 2019.
Hey, bull market in 2019.
This is ludicrous. You gotta love these guys.
You know what? If you take enough shots at the rim, you're gonna hit it once.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually. Yeah. I can hit a half court shot if you give me 5,000 tries. Probably.
Maybe 10.
Maybe 10.
Maybe.
You can do better than David
Stockman.
Maybe
you could toss a Bitcoin and do it.
I could probably do that. What does it look like?
We'll be back. Don't go away. Yeah. All right, we're back. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Working longer works better than saving more for retirement. This one for Johnny Dean, but I think it's really, really interesting stuff because it is grounded in some pretty cool academic research.
Now, is this what you said you brought up a while back and I sort of looked askance at it?
You did look askance at it. You may not have thought you looked askance, but
but
even
I did.
Sounded askance.
Well, let's try it. Let's do it.
So John Chauvin, he's an economics professor at Stanford University.
Oh, yeah.
Along with Gila Bronstein of Cornerstone Research, Jason Scott of Financial Engines, and Sita Slavov of George Mason University got together. Now, I don't know them, but they've got really smart names.
That sounds pretty good.
Gila Bronstein? Come on.
Chauvin? Are you a Chauvinist?
I've actually seen a picture of him. He looks smart.
Looks smart. How do you look smart? Okay.
I'll tell you later.
All right.
Got to be politically correct here.
Okay. All right.
What's more, the authors noted that the relative power of saving more is even lower if the decision is increase saving is made later in work life. In other words, if you bump up how much you save for retirement by 1 percentage point 10 years before retirement, it has the same impact on the sustainable retirement standard of living as working a single month longer, just one single month.
Yeah, so what you're saying is rather than bump it up for the next, let's say I have 10 years, was it 10 years?
Yeah.
I have 10 years to retirement. Rather than bump up my savings by 1% per year, I guess.
Yes, it is 1% per year.
Rather than do that, all I got to do is work a month longer and I'll have, in essence, the equivalent amount.
Equal to or better than. You get to spend an extra 1% on you.
But meaning what? If I work longer, it's because, first of all, I have another month of salary.
You have another month of salary, another month of savings,
another month of
Social Security. In other words, every time you postpone it by a month or two or three.
See, I got to think it's the salary that has the most impact. Because another month of 401k savings, may or may not, that's not going to make a big difference.
Well,
after,
it's also,
you know,
also
30
you're
going to
live 1 month less, too.
Well, I will
be
closer.
And the actuarial calculation.
Well, that's probably true. If I have a bad job, it may take a year off of my life.
Let me read on.
Okay, go.
To be fair, households that can work longer and bump up the percent they save toward retirement stand a better chance of supporting a satisfactory and sustainable standard of living in retirement. Well, that makes sense, of course. And households that can work longer increasingly bump up their percent they save each year, invest in low-cost funds, and delay Social Security stand the best chance of achieving the retirement they desire. So they're not saying just work longer. It's work longer and save more.
Yeah,
but the power of working longer is pretty amazing. Here's what Chauvin said in an interview that could give hope to to late career workers who aren't saving enough and who haven't accumulated enough to fund their desired lifestyle in retirement. I've talked about this in workshops and seminars and so forth where I am presenting, that financial advisors would do their clients a great service by understanding this.
Yep.
Because they sit there and they play with the calculations and the spreadsheets and all that stuff, trying to get them to fit into a 4% rule that may or may not be working for them, when all they got to do is say, you know what, just work another year or two and you'll be fine.
If you can. I understand. We have to say this. I understand there are people who can't. People with, you know, physical jobs.
Sure.
They can't do them after 60. There are economic conditions. Somebody gets laid off. They can't get rehired because they're too old. I mean, all kinds of things. But if you can, if the choice is yours.
And most people can.
Yeah, probably most.
Most people can.
More than not.
You have a 3% unemployment rate. There's going to be a job out there that you can do even post-retirement.
Yeah, although it's a question of salary. I mean, but yes, I know where you're going.
Say you're 46, he goes on, and you're thinking of retiring at 64. And, well, you do the projections and you're in terrible shape. Well, if you work till 66, it looks a lot better. And so you have about 15%, 16% more income for the rest of your life if you just added those two extra years of work. That's significant. That is significant. So financial advisors should have this in their hip pocket. So when they run their projections and the individual is going to be short and they say, well, you got to save an extra $1,000 a month.
I can't do that for the next 10 years.
Work a couple more years and you'll be fine.
That's the equivalent.
That's the equivalent. 15-16% more income. Somebody wanted $5,000 is like, you know, getting almost $6,000.
Continue to save, of course, along
the
way.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. It does get daunting to somebody who says, you know, I haven't really saved anything. I had this, I had that, whatever the reason they never saved, and they're 45, 50 years old. They don't have a lot to, you know, if you can tell them the solution is either save an extra grand a month, as you said, or work for an extra year or two. I think the idea of being able to work for an extra year or two probably makes them feel a little bit better than having to save, you know, I need that's 12 grand more a year. I don't have it.
Well, not only that, but many times you're talking to this 46, 56-year-old about some of the other risks in retirement, like health care, long-term care, and all of that stuff. And they may need that extra income because they don't think about it at 46. At 46, who's thinking about whether or not they're going to need to fund a long-term care insurance policy? But I'll tell you one thing, at 66, it's high on the list.
Because your friends are starting to...
I have a lot of friends that have got debilitating situations.
And these are people who 20 years ago were in great shape.
I've got a good friend that's a dentist, and, you know, 5 years ago, he was in great shape, playing golf several times a week, and now he's really, really slowing down.
Well, things happen. It's just the way it is. But you cannot convince, in most cases, a 46-year-old that they're going to need it. They don't look that far ahead.
We hope that they do. So anyway, this is good for financial advisors, and it's good for y'all because obviously, if you can work a little bit longer, it can make a huge impact on your retirement. And by the way, when Social Security was first enacted and people were supposed to, you know, kick off at about 65, that was a different story. But today, we're living about 1 year longer for every 3 or 4 years that we're alive. So it's kind of okay to work a few years longer.
It is. And again, I will come back to there are people who tried to do this in 2007, 8, 9, 10, and when everything was just absolutely rotten, even though it was, you know, looking like it could get better. Circumstances happen where it may not be possible to do that. But if it is possible, just do it.
Well,
if you have
and
to.
And that's why you have other options like reverse mortgages. All is not lost.
We have an email coming up. We'll do it later on this hour. I think somebody asking about that very thing.
All right. Well, we'll do that in just a bit.
But it shows the importance, again, of going back, going back in time, of saving early. Because we've talked about this before. Somebody who saves between the ages of 20 and 30 and stops at age 65 has more money, assuming everything's exactly the same, than somebody who started at 30 and invested through age 65.
I actually did the math in one of my books, and initially it was Mutt and Jeff, and they made me change the names, I think.
I used Goofus and Gallant last time.
Oh, there you go.
So that could work. But whatever. It doesn't matter.
Weren't Mutt and Jeff like little mices?
I've heard of
like
them.
That?
I don't know, but maybe.
I don't know where I came up with that. I just thought, well, Mutt and Jeff.
I'm going to look
like
them up because I think they were cartoon characters.
They were characters. Yeah, but were they mice?
I've got to look. I don't know.
All right. So you learn a lot of stuff on this program.
Is it all useful? I don't know.
No. Stick around. We've got more coming your way when we come back on the Ray Lucia Show. Welcome back. This is the Ray Lucia Show, helping you to make better money moves, the program all about your money your business and your life. We'll get to the business stuff a little bit later, perhaps. But I saw this, John, and again, I thought of you. How to invest for the long term in a turbulent market. And I see the 2 stars I put on that baby.
Am I worth 2 stars? Is that the deal? Or that just means that this is something you have to talk about?
It's something
about.
I had because, to talk about.
May I remind you that you teased that like a week and a half
I
ago,
know.
Too.
I know. Well, you know, I have.
But we've been busy.
When I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a lot of show prep done.
I understand.
And I still think I'm doing 5 hours a day. So I prepare for 5, and we only do 2.
2, and that's it. So some of it we have to put off to later.
Carry over.
But here we go.
So some of this is really, really obvious, but when you sort of look at the DNA behind it, it's quite interesting. We all know this. Investing for the long term allows you to take advantage of high return opportunities that others might shun. That's pretty clear. If you want to own the next Amazon or Microsoft or Google, you probably got to be in a whole bunch of stocks for a very long time period, because nobody's smart enough. Well, maybe there are a couple, but most of us are not smart enough to pick these companies so far in advance that we're going to become gajillionaires.
You got to cast a wide net, as they say.
Being a long-term investor helps guard against behavioral biases. You were just talking about this. Recency bias causes people to over-extrapolate the near past further into the future, the near past, further into the future, more than facts merit.
You're absolutely right. You brought up the prediction on Bitcoin. Was that
right.
This hour?
Yeah.
You brought it up on Bitcoin. Why? Because it was on everybody's mind. Why? Because it was a new paradigm, just like the tech stuff and just like the housing and all the other things that were the flavor of the month or the year or whatever it was.
Long-term investing reduces frictional costs, such as trading expenses and tax impact. Do not ignore frictional costs and taxes. Every time there's a transaction, there is a cost. Rarely do you see it in mutual funds, even in ETFs and otherwise. There's friction. Yeah, there's a buy side, there's a sell side, there's management fees, there's all kinds of costs. But the biggie is the tax implication, because if you or your asset manager is trading frequently, not only are they experiencing frictional costs, but you will be experiencing tax issues.
You're doing stocks. You may not be aware that if you're doing this on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, you're going to see short-term capital gains taxes, which we know, ordinary income.
Tax is ordinary income. So here is what we found. This is really interesting stuff, because evidence shows that longer holding periods are associated with better performance. Go figure that. Okay, so according to Dimensional Fund Advisors, over the 15-year period ending on 12/31/2015, the average holding period of a stock by U.S. equity mutual funds has been approximately 1 year.
Since when? How long?
From the 15-year period ending 12/31/2015. That's turnover. That's 100% turnover.
And it's not a coincidence that people started online trading about that time back in 2000, and this is what's creating a lot of that.
So then they have these graphs, the data presented above. And I don't have my reading glasses, but I'll see if I can see this, because it's really fine print. Well, let me read on, because they may go ahead and explain it. All right, the data presented above shows that when equity funds were divided into quartiles based on their average holding period, a much higher percentage of funds with longer holding periods outperformed the benchmark over the full period than did funds in any other quartile. And looking at the longest quartile, which is a 3 to 6 year hold, rather than a performance that appears to be around 5%, it looks closer to 25%.
I'm not sure.
Just think relatively speaking.
So what you're saying is, again, the longer you held it, the better the performance was.
Right.
Now, I'm assuming it diversified, because I could buy some high flyer stock and hold on to it and it'll never recover.
That's true.
We're talking about a diversified
portfolio. Yeah, we're talking about a mutual fund or a managed portfolio.
Not a basket of three stocks.
Right. And then they go on to behavioral biases. If you let market volatility get to you, it might scare you into selling at well below the value of your investments. It's one thing to have an investment process in theory. The question is, how are you going to stick to it when things are not going your way? This is so important. You know, it's funny because we talked years ago on this program. In fact, so many years ago, my company was a fledgling small little company back in the early 90s. And it was either you or Rob or somebody said, you know, what you really need to do is hire a psychologist. And I've often thought about that. If financial firms would employ a psychologist, and whenever your client called you up and said, you know, I'm thinking about changing firms, or I'm thinking about selling my Amazon stock, or you know, I'm thinking the 200-day moving average, and all this crap that is meaningless, come on in and talk to the shrink.
Well, you just need a couch on there, you know, and somebody with
Absolutely.
A goatee, looks like Sigmund Freud or something. And it can be almost impossible to talk somebody out of that, though. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can tell them, here are all the stats. Here's the reasons why you should stay. Why did you buy the stock in the first place? That should be a question. Why? Okay, you know, whatever the stock is, I don't like it. It's a 200-day moving average. It's gone down 20%. Why did you buy it in the first place? You like the company? Yeah. Well, then why you want to sell it? I don't know. You know, do you not like the company? No. Well, why'd you buy it? Well, I thought it was going to go up 20%. I mean, time period. You went back to long term. Here's what you got to do is define long term. I've been at long term. It's been almost a year.
Yeah. I mean. Well, you know how I define long term.
I know. 15 years.
Yeah. Let me go through the different stages of or levels of conservatism, if you will. All right. Because I've talked about this before.
In investing.
If somebody is a faint-hearted investor, they ask me, should I be in stocks? I don't want to be in stocks because I don't want to lose any money. In fact, I like the idea of getting a guaranteed rate of return. Now, nobody can use the term guaranteed when we talk about stocks. But when we talk about the broad stock market, it would be extremely rare to even think that you would lose money over a 25-year period of time. In fact, it's never happened. In fact, if you go back to the worst 25-year period for the Standard & Poor's 500 since 1950, you would find that the worst 25-year period, if you just bought and held on, is a 7.94% rate of return. So that's a faint-hearted investor. Now, if you're somewhere between conservative and faint-hearted, you could throw 20 years in there because the market's never not at least kept pace with inflation.
I think even
over
15.
A 20-year period.
Is it 20 or is it 15 even
15? Years, there's been, I think there was one 15-year period where it didn't keep pace with inflation, but not a loss. Not a paper loss on actual dollars. So that would be conservative, right? So in other words, if you came to me and said, I want you to guarantee me, the first thing I'm going to say is I can't guarantee anything.
Right.
But if you want a statistical assurance that you won't lose money, then put your money in the Standard & Poor's 500 and don't touch it for 15 years. Most of the time, you get about an 8% out of that. But there have been a couple of periods where it's not been so hot. Right?
Well, you're going to have that. If you're going to get 8% over 15 years, you're going to have, you know, up 12 one year, down 2 the next, up,
so that's,
know, whatever.
So that's conservative. So conservative would be 15 years. Faint-hearted is somewhere between 20 and 25 years. Moderate would be 10 years. And aggressive would be 5 years. Even somebody that's going to be aggressive. I don't care what stock you're buying or what mutual fund you're buying. Think about this for a moment. The NASDAQ was at an all-time high on March 10th, the year 2000, at, what was it, John?
5,042 or 48,
48,
something like that.
62.
A little over 5,000.
So at 5,000, it took 15 years. It took until April the 23rd of 2015 for the NASDAQ to get back to even. Remember, there's not a lot of dividends floating around those NASDAQ companies for the most part. The NASDAQ 100.
Virtually none.
So you're talking about a 15-year hold just to get your money back if you were an investor like John Dean was back in 2000 in the tech stocks.
I jumped in with both feet.
Yes, you did.
NASDAQ just shot up for 4 years.
Yeah, but it was in 4 days you thought you were a genius.
10 days.
No, 10 days.
It was 10 full days. It went up.
All right, emails are next on the Ray Lucia Show. Stay with us.